Welcome to the Inspired Business Leaders Podcast, brought to you by Inspire Wealth, bringing you interviews with top business professionals, empowering you to understand our current business climate and the successes and struggles other business professionals have overcome. Here's your host, Nick Boer.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Inspired Business Leaders Podcast. This is Nick, and today we are going to have on Amanda Rush, and I'm really excited about this one because I've really spent a lot of time over the last few years really trying to figure out the ins and outs of social media and how you can leverage it for business and how what's the most effective and efficient way based on your industry, based on the clients you're trying to attract. And I'm really excited. Amanda is the guru of social media, and I'm really looking forward to chatting. So Amanda, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much, Nick, for having me. I'm so excited to be here and to chat all things social media today.
Perfect, perfect. So why don't you start with your entrepreneurial journey? Start how you've gotten to where you are now.
Yes, absolutely. Well, so I am the founder and CEO of the Virtual Assistant Studio, which for those of you who haven't heard of us, we are a virtual assistant agency that specifically supports female influencers. And I also teach my fellow moms how to build profitable virtual assistant businesses through my signature course, the Full-Time BA, so that they can make full-time income during nap time. And I think my backstory kind of leads into exactly how I got here. So my story, like many others, back in 2020, when the pandemic hit, I was laid off from my full-time job, and in my nine-to-five job was a corporate recruiter and a trainer. So I would go around, I worked in the retail industry, to different stores all up and down the East Coast, and I would train their store managers on how to be great at their jobs, and that would trickle down to their team. So you can imagine that with the majority of my job being travel, that there wasn't much of a need for me when the world was shut down to travel.
Right.
So I was laid off, and during that same time, my husband had COVID, and we were home with our one-year-old, and we went from very quickly to this two household income to no income coming in. And to this day, I mean, I can still remember that feeling in my stomach. I was driving down the road crying. I think I was trying to call my mom and thinking, oh my gosh, like, what am I going to do? And I'm sure so many other people felt the same exact way, probably a very different scenario for their families, but everybody had this feeling of what am I going to do? And my background in college was PR. I always loved social media. I'm a constant learner. So I was always taking all these online courses. And it's funny because my husband would be like, why are you learning about sales funnels and email marketing? And I'd be like, I don't know, but this is really interesting to me. And so I had acquired all of these skills. And I went online that day, and I was in and out of all these Facebook groups because I was like, okay, I can just find another job in the meantime, because I didn't know how long things were going to last or, you know, what things were going to look like in the future. And I started freelancing. And literally before I knew it, after 4 weeks, I had replaced my full-time income and then some, and I had built out this six-figure online business. And that is literally when the Virtual Assistant Studio was born. And it's funny because I was shocked that this had happened so quickly that I started sharing about it on social media. And I had people that I had never spoken to in years reaching out to me, people that I didn't know online reaching out to me being like, okay, what is it that you do? How is it that you're doing this? I see your kids are running around in the background, but you're also working. You're able to support your family. Like, I need more information. And that's when I decided to build out the course, because I was like, oh, I've got to get this information into the hands of other moms, because this is life-changing. And so that's kind of how everything got started. And here we are 2 years later, and we're still chugging along. I have a team of six full-time employees underneath me, all moms that help support the Virtual Assistant Studio. And it's just amazing to see how far we've come.
Amanda, that is Absolutely amazing. And that's in more ways than one, obviously. I mean, you launched a business out of necessity, number one, and you've made it successful in 2 years. You've got six full-time employees. I mean, I'm blown away. I can't even believe these are the types of things though that are so impactful and so powerful, and why it's so great that you do what you do and how you built this over the last couple of years. So some of the things I want to make sure we talk about, you know, you obviously have your business and you have employees already. You obviously have been doing social media on one side or one way or the other for longer than that, as you said. You've always enjoyed social media. You did PR a lot in college. So what I want to start with is how to attract and land dream clients using social media. Is what does that look like? And I know it might be industry specific, but I'm curious on your thoughts and how that looks.
Yeah, absolutely. Such a good question. So I think, you know, a lot of people think, oh, this doesn't translate from industry to industry. And I think what will surprise a lot of your audience is if you're doing the same work, it does translate. And what I mean by that is when I think a lot of times we overcomplicate things. We overcomplicate things in business and we overcomplicate things in social media, and it doesn't have to be super complicated in order to be successful. So when thinking about your social media strategy and really how are you attracting the dream clients so that you can land them, you need to first think about your messaging. So who is it that you're targeting? And one of the best exercises that I did really early on in my business is I had a whole lot of conversations with my ideal client. I asked them a million questions. I wanted to get to know what sort of language are they using? What phrases are they saying? What are their biggest pain points? What are their objections? What are their fears? And I literally gathered all this information and I put it in a Google spreadsheet. Again, nothing fancy, and it was completely free to talk to these people. And when you're starting a business, you got nothing but time anyway, so it's a great exercise to do. Mm-hmm. And I literally reference this same Google Doc to this day. I will go back anytime I'm struggling to create content and say, okay, what did they say? What came out of their mouth? And then what we do is we use what's called sales psychology, and we infuse that into our social media strategy, and we say, okay, what are these people saying and how can we serve them and how can we meet them where they are now? And we do that by taking exactly what they told us and producing content around it. And so you don't have to have a large audience in order to have one that's highly converting. And I think I'm a great testimony of that. I don't have 10,000 followers on Instagram, but I have a six-figure business. And it just goes to show you don't have to have a large social media following. You just have to attract the right people through your social media messaging. And I like to think of social media kind of like, it's like your billboard for your business, you know? And so whatever's on that billboard is what people are going to see. It's their first impression of you. And a lot of times it's their lasting impression. And, you know, you only have a few seconds to grab somebody. So thinking about things like, what colors am I choosing? What language am I using? What feeling am I giving off? And creating content around that is what's going to attract those clients that you want to land.
You know, I think that's so key. I think the language, and I love that you're also utilizing the sales psychology. That's not something I hear all the time. You know, and I think I stressed already, I've talked to numerous social media companies over the last few years, not only for my own business, but also for business owners, for them, for clients, for just different reasons, like you commented, Amanda. I'm always a student who wants to learn and be educated on numerous areas. So for me, it's always learning myself as well. So I think that's really interesting that you're implementing that sales psychology into the social media strategy to attract those ideal clients or those dream clients. Because I think if you're not doing that, how do you really expect that them to come or to follow you?
Exactly. And the reason that it's effective, it's is because we understand who they are and what those pain points are. We've already had those conversations. So we're not doing it in a sleazy way. We're not trying to trick them. We're not using gimmicky headlines that then have nothing to do with our actual content. It's using that sales psychology to attract them. But then what's converting them is that we're able to serve them well with our content. So I think, you know, I'm going to give like a perfect example. The other day, and a lot of times people use social media in order to find people that they're searching out. And this example is like perfect because the other day my husband and I were like, you know what? We want to build a house. So we were like, what's the first step of building a house? Okay, we need to acquire land. Okay, we don't know how to acquire land. So I'm like, I need to find a real estate agent that can help me find plots of land to acquire. So what did I do? I literally went to Instagram and I typed in Atlanta real estate agent because I'm based out of Atlanta, and all these profiles popped up. And out of all these profiles that popped up, probably three of them were well branded. And so I clicked on the three that were well branded and I picked the one that had the most helpful information that I was like, ooh, yes, this girl understands what she's talking about. She's authoritative. She's informational and she's helping me in my search. And that's the one that I went with. And so one, her taking the leap to have an Instagram profile to provide free content. And she knew who her ideal customer was because she was creating content specifically for me. So when I went to her profile and I felt the connection because of that content, it then converted into a lead. So what did I do? I direct messaged her on Instagram. I was like, hey, are you taking on new clients? She said yes. And then I was put into her sales funnel, which was like some emails and we chatted and all of that. So that right there is just a great example. I mean, that's the real estate industry. I feel like, you know, real estate is very old school most of the time. Like you go online to a forum and then like you look at a house and then they contact you and it's like this whole thing and it's very much like a rat race. And that is a very unconventional way that not a lot of real estate agents are doing. But because she went the extra mile, I guarantee you I'm not the only lead that she's converted because she put the extra effort in to have a social media presence.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm sure that because she's going the extra mile and she's, like you said, she's creating content for her ideal client. I think that that's the key. And I also think that she's in an industry, like you said, that tends to be old school, very similar to my industry, that they're just, we're not very innovative. We just kind of stick with what works and do it. So it's interesting that that scenario specifically pertained to you, to your situation. So I think that's great.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think too, you know, there's so many different types of social media content, and I think it can be overwhelming when you're first getting started to be like, okay, do I create funny content? Do I create educational content? Do I share just my work? Do I share my life? Like, how much do people want me to share? And for that, I would really recommend, again, using a free resource like your Google Calendar and sitting down and coming up with 3 to 5 pieces of pillar content that you can create around constantly. And these are 3 topics that are in line with your brand and what your ideal audience is also interested in. So 3 to 5 things that you can always talk about, and then create and rotate content between those 3 to 5 pillars. So if I'm trying to think of an example, if it's a lifestyle brand, maybe somebody is talking about their motherhood, but they're also into finances. So they're talking about budgeting and how to save for their family and how that coordinates with being a mother. And then they're also into life hacks for fun things they can do to save money, something like that. Those kind of all go hand in hand. So you have the connection piece, which is the motherhood, where they'll probably share more of their relatable content, like, you know, cute pictures of their kids, or this is what we did this weekend. That's maybe 20%. Then they have their main pillar, which is going to be the finance aspect, where they're sharing their budgeting tips, their hacks, what an actual budget sheet looks like for them, what they did this month, how much money they saved, all these things that go into that pillar. And then maybe they bring it back into the family aspect. Okay, we're a family of four. This is what it looks like for us. This is when we went to the grocery store, this is how we actually saved money. And these are all helpful things that kind of go together. And so then they go to their Google Calendar and they sit down and they say, okay, these are my three pillar pieces of content. I think I can share this on Monday, this on Wednesday, and this on Friday. And then maybe I'll sprinkle this in on Sunday. And so they're able to sit down and batch that out a couple weeks in advance, go ahead and schedule it, and then they're done. And they don't have to think about it. And if they want to pop on randomly on social media, they can, but they have a consistent, well-executed social media strategy that supports whatever it is that their business is talking about.
Yes. See, I think that's so important, is the consistency. And again, across all platforms, I think is also important, whether it's Instagram, whether it's Facebook, whether it's YouTube or LinkedIn. I just think having that strategy and being able to be consistent with it, where not that it comes off automated, but that it's for the business owner, that they don't have all this work to do and spend hours every week creating it, because that's where it gets hard for the business owner to actually do it.
Right. So I think with social media, if you go into it with a plan and you're creating one large piece of content, that's your pillar content. And so all those other platforms that you're talking about should really be fluid. You shouldn't have, like, you have your YouTube channel and your podcast as your two main pieces of content. And so you're able to chop those up and repurpose them on Pinterest and Instagram and TikTok and send out an email blast, all using that one piece of content that you created for the week. And that's something that can easily be delegated out to a team member or a virtual assistant for a reasonable cost, and it doesn't require any extra time for you.
Well, that's interesting. That's, again, this is something, even though I've talked to probably a couple dozen social media / digital marketing companies in the last 2 or 3 years, no one has ever explained it or ever positioned it like you're doing, which is the pillars and okay, let's create one, and we can make it across all platforms. And again, like you said, just focus on the one, and then it'll make it a lot easier to kind of streamline into the others.
Yeah, so absolutely.
I think that's,
yeah, and it's so much more manageable when you think about it that way. And the way I think about it is, like, myself, I don't consume content on all platforms. Most people have one platform that they love. They either love Instagram, or they love TikTok, or they love YouTube. Maybe they have a second one that they prefer. They might throw in, like, a podcast in addition to a YouTube or Instagram or TikTok. But the average user is not on all platforms because they just aren't enough hours in a day. And so when you think about it like that, you actually have unique audiences on each of these individual platforms. So repurposing your content, no one person is not going to see that same piece of content on each platform, and it's not going to feel like the same piece of content, because when you repurpose it, you're reformatting it for that platform. So it's going to change slightly. Like, it might have a different title, or it might have a different, you know, music in the background or something like that, to where if for some reason somebody did see that same piece of content, they're not going to think, oh, Nick just pulled that from his YouTube video. They're going to think, oh, wow, that was such a good tip. I'm so glad he reshared that, because, like, I didn't catch that in his YouTube video, but I'm glad he emphasized that one point. I mean, I think there's, like, that average thing that, like, somebody has to see something 7 times before they take action on it. So, like, if we have to see something 7 times before we take action on it, like, I think it's okay if we see it twice, you know?
Right, for sure. I know that there's no doubt about that. So this is interesting. You're obviously talking about, you know, you're talking about a lot of stuff here already on making sure it's streamlined and creating the content and that kind of thing. So how do you help your clients make 6 figures on social media without a large following? What does that look like?
That's a great question. So I think in the beginning, the key is really going to be optimizing your profiles and sticking to 1 to 2 platforms. So when you're just getting started, naturally you're going to have a small social media following, and there's nothing wrong with that. And that's really where you have to go back to the basics and think about, where are my ideal clients showing up? Is that actually Instagram? Is that YouTube? Is that TikTok? And focus again back on the messaging. So I think one thing that's really interesting, and I saw this somewhere on Instagram the other day, it said that the majority of people who aren't liking and commenting and whatever, engaging in your post, are actually the ones that are watching the closest. And so what's interesting, and I found this to be true in my business, most of the time, if you're in a service-based business, when somebody is seeking out a service, they're seeking it out once, and then they're looking to make a decision and act on that decision. And most of the time, our clients are not following along with the virtual assistant studio for months and months and months before they decide to work with us. We usually find that they searched on Instagram, and let's say they search virtual assistant for influencers, and 10 people popped up. And again, they chose whichever one resonated best with what they felt and their brand and what they were looking for and their own personal values as a business. And so by understanding who our person is that we want to attract and tweaking our messaging to fit that, we're attracting our ideal clients, which then quickly leads to six-figure business. The other piece of the puzzle is really understanding, okay, who is it that you're serving, and making sure, and I feel like a lot of people don't talk about this, that you're priced appropriately in order to get to six figures. So if you're charging minimum wage for your services, it's going to be really hard to get to six figures. Like, you're going to have to create an offer that's a little bit higher price and that's worth the value, and then make sure that you're marketing and attracting somebody who's also willing to invest in that service and who values it as well. So it's kind of, you've got two pieces of the puzzle. You've got like the pricing aspect, where you really have to think, okay, as a business, like, how much or how many services would I have to sell or sign on, or clients do I need to attract in order to hit six figures? And then also, how am I going to attract them? And so you have those two pieces of the puzzle that you kind of have to nail. And then also thinking too, like, do you have a value ladder within your services? Like, is there one service that you can offer right now that requires no extra work of you? And then maybe, is there like a second service that is a natural progression, that if somebody signs on with you with X service, then they would also probably want Y service, and you have an opportunity to not only serve your client better, but also to increase your package with them, which will also then bump up the amount of revenue that you're bringing in. And you know just as well as I do, it's a lot less expensive to bump somebody up that's an existing client than it is to acquire new clients. It's much more expensive to market to a new client, to attract them, to convert them, to onboard them, and then get them in, than it is to just add on a service you already offered to an existing client. So really thinking strategically about how you can go about that.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, especially coming from my side of the industry with what I do, I mean, it costs a lot of money to acquire new clients. And because, I mean, certain demographics in certain areas in my field are so oversaturated with financial advisors that you got to differentiate yourself, you got to stand out. Who's your focus? You know, where do you stand out, or where is your differentiator? So I think that's, and I think that's important for all businesses. It just depends on who's that ideal client. And like you mentioned, what platform are their ideal clients probably on more than the others? And I think that's something, even from my perspective with my business, that, you know, I just assume Facebook is always the one to focus on, because the retiree crowd tends to be on Facebook more than anywhere else. And that's not always true. So
right. I, and also think about like, where are they going to find information? Because they might be on Facebook, but they might be looking up information of like, let's say they are going to Pinterest, and they're, because a lot of people use Pinterest as a search engine, and they're typing in things like how to make X amount of dollars in retirement, how to retire at this age, how to make extra money in retirement. And so if you're targeting your ideal client with those keywords, then you could easily put some pins on Pinterest, and then those pins would funnel back to your website or your offer or some sort of a lead magnet that you might have, and you could drive traffic that way too. So I think, you know, thinking about how can I touch them in multiple places.
You know, I think that's so, I think that's, number one, that's amazing. But number two, I've got two teenagers. I've got my son is 18 and my daughter's 16. And it's so interesting to me because even my wife, you know, I mentioned recently, we just started a Pinterest account for the business. And, you know, even when we started TikTok, my wife and kids are like, what? You have a TikTok? And now they're like, why the heck do you have a Pinterest account? And it's just what you just said, though, Amanda, that's exactly why we have a Pinterest account. Because a lot of people use that as a search engine, and you can use that and turn it and direct them to the website or use it as a lead magnet to go somewhere else. I mean, there's so many things that you can do. And I think that what you just brought up, I think, really hits home, because there's a lot of people, and this is going to dovetail into the next question. There's a lot of people out there that don't fully understand what is a blogger or what is an influencer. And I don't fully understand, but I know some of the basics. And it's so interesting because it's like when you bring that up, I know from my end, sometimes when I bring that up to, like, you know, hey, an influencer, or hey, I want to work with an influencer, someone's like, what the heck does that even mean? Like, what does that look like? So it's that does dovetail into my next question. What does it look like to work behind the scenes with a blogger influencer, whether it's on Instagram or YouTube or on TikTok? What does that look like?
Yeah, well, first off, I should say it's really fun. And that's why I got into it. But also, I think one thing that people don't realize about the blogging and influencer world is that it's a lot of work. And most of these influencers are not just moms sharing their most recent finds at Target. They are very strategic business women and men who are running their own small business, the same as you and I. And the thing about the being a blogger influencer is your entire job is on social media. So it sometimes gets a little blurry with the lines of like, this is my business, but this is also my life. And I think a lot of times from the outside looking in, it looks very easy and it looks very effortless. And it's intended to be that way. I mean, that is the goal of the blogger influencer, is for everything to be looking very effortless and very, you know, just natural, because most bloggers and influencers did start out that way. They started out just sharing things that they loved and their daily habits and what's working for them and tips and tricks and whatever it is that they're passionate about. And then they realized, kind of like myself, oh, wow, I just built a business. Like, this is actually something that can support my family and also gives me a little bit of freedom and flexibility to, you know, take my kids to the park in the middle of the day and stuff like that, which is very cool. But the thing about bloggers and influencers is, just like any business, they have to be very strategic about what they're sharing and the partnerships that they're forming. So there's a couple different ways that bloggers and influencers make money. The number one way is usually through affiliate income. And so most of our clients partner with an affiliate platform called Reward Style, which is also known as LTK. And there's another main one that's called Shop Style. And those are kind of like the big powerhouses in the blogger and influencer sphere. There's other small ones, obviously, too, but those are going to be like your two major ones. And so most influencers are sharing, if they're sharing an affiliate link, they're sharing it through those two platforms. And what that means is, let's say they're like, hey, you know, I bought these book bags for my kids for back to school, and here's the link if you want to buy them too. That link has an embedded cookie that basically tracks. It can't see any personal information, but it can just see that, oh, 100 backpacks were purchased, and they get 5% of those, the commission for the backpacks, and that's paid out through reward style. The next way that bloggers and influencers make money is through brand partnerships. And this one's a lot more lucrative, because these most of the time are like long-form partnerships. And this is where a blogger influencer is actually creating content around a specific thing. So let's say that a blogger influencer partners with, let's just say Target for back to school, because that's easy and it's back to school time. So the Target sends over a brief and a contract that says, okay, we're trying to promote back to school. We want you to create a piece of content for us. And so the influencer has creative freedom to create whatever feels natural to them. And usually this is best done when an influencer is already organically using that brand or that product in their everyday life. So sharing it is not a stretch. It's something that they would have probably already shared, only now they're forming a partnership with the brand so that the brand can say, okay, our focus is on back to school for this piece of content. And so the influencer films the content and gets all the deliverables, shares it with their audience, and then in return, that brand would pay the influencer. So that's kind of like the second way that the blogger and influencers make money. And then the third way would be doing like collaborations, like their own collections with brands or companies. If they launch their own product suite for their audience, where they're going direct to market, like if they created like a line of t-shirts and sold it to their audience that way. So that's kind of like the three different ways that bloggers and influencers make money. And in knowing that, there's a lot of kind of like the stuff that we talked about earlier in our conversation of content creation that goes into serving their audience. So they are obviously trying to serve their audience every single day, which is, as you can imagine, a very big task to do. So they have to be even more in tune, I would say, than like your average business owner with what their audience wants, what they don't want, what they're liking, what are their pain points, what are they shopping for, what's, you know, hard for them, what do they have going on in their life, answering all of these questions so that when they're coming up with their content calendar, whether they're in the fashion niche or the home niche or, you know, financial services, whatever it is, that they can create content for their audience. And so an ideal situation would be an influencer that has like a healthy mix of what we call organic content versus like paid promotional content where they're actually getting paid by the brand. And so I would say like a healthy mix would be at least like 70-30, where like 70% is like promotional and 30% is organic. But obviously, you know, that can like ebb and flow depending on the different times of the year. But yeah, their businesses look very similar to ours. Lots of content creation. It's a very quick pace. So, you know, they have to be very in tune with the retail industry, because the retail industry can be very quick pace in itself, in the sense of like, oh, they just found an extra couple thousand dollars in their budget at the end of the month, and they decided to invest it into influencer marketing. So now this influencer has a 1 week timeline to turn around content and get it back to the brand and posted. So things like that sometimes happen. So they have to be very much like on their toes and in tune with things. And that's kind of where we come into play as virtual assistants supporting them, is they really need to be able to focus on the actual content creation. So things that only they can do. Like, I cannot be their face for a TikTok or a reel or a try on haul. But they can. And so, but what I can do is I can take that content and I can put it into Pinterest, and I can chop it up and make it into a TikTok, and I can send out an email blast, and I can pop into their Facebook group and chat with their community over there. So those are all things that we can do behind the scenes. Or I can support, you know, someone in their DMs, or making sure that their website is SEO optimized, and all these things that kind of work together to grow their audience so that they have an audience to be able to serve, if that makes sense.
That makes a ton of sense. And it's interesting because, you know, I keep reverting back to this, but, you know, I mean, the fact that, You literally started a business in the midst of COVID, not only out of necessity, but also based on some of your experience and what you did in the corporate world and what you did in college. And you've created a six-figure business that has six employees. And, you know, you guys are just growing like gangbusters. So I give you a lot of credit. You're also saying things that a lot of social media companies and owners that I've talked to are not talking about. You've actually taught me more about influencers and bloggers in the last 10 minutes than I've ever learned. And I've been trying to research influencers and bloggers and try to talk to other social media companies about them and how they can impact my business and how they can help my business. So it just blows my mind.
Marketing it's so awesome because influencer marketing didn't exist 20 years ago. You know,
right.
Our forms of marketing were very traditional. It was, you know, ads in magazines, billboards, newspapers, like TV commercials, all things that were very expensive. And not to say that influencer marketing is not expensive. It obviously can be for a business. But at the same time, depending on the goals of your campaign with an influencer marketing strategy, it can be very lucrative for a business. And especially if you're aligned, I think the best partnerships are where you can find, as a business, if you can partner yourself with an influencer that is very much in line with the type of people that you're trying to target. So if you know, again, going back to like, who is your person? Who is your ideal customer or client? And is that person inside of that influencer's audience? And if the answer is yes, and if the majority of the people inside that influencer's audience is a yes, then that is going to be an ideal partnership and it's probably going to be worth your time. And I can say that from like firsthand experience, because when I was launching my course, I was fortunate to have a few influencers in the space who had the larger audiences share about it. And because there were so many moms in their audiences, I was flooded with clients and students and inquiries. And so that was just from one share on Instagram stories. Like it's
wow.
Just make an Instagram story. So you can imagine that if you did a full out campaign with an influencer where they're sharing about you and your company very organically because they believe in it on a regular basis, then that would be huge and it would definitely be worth the investment.
No, that makes a lot of sense. That definitely, like you said, the key is having that influencer and a lot of their following, those ideal clients and that demographic that business is trying to reach. Because if that's the case, it's a great partnership. It can be, yes, it can be worth the investment. It can be very lucrative for the
yeah.
business. So. Well, this has been very informative, Amanda. I mean, I was excited to talk to you in the first place because of your background and your knowledge and the social media aspect. But I give you a lot of credit. You're very, very knowledgeable, and I think that any business that is really looking to take their social media to the next level and try to streamline it and try to organically grow and try to grow their business, I think definitely needs to be having a conversation with you and your firm. So I thank you for your time. And what's the best way if someone that's listening wants to get a hold of you and wants to have an initial consult with you, what's the best way to do that?
Well, first off, thank you so much. You're too kind. Yeah, you guys are welcome to hop on over to our website. It's thevirtualassistantstudio.com, and you can reach me there. Or if you're a little more casual and want to shoot me a DM on Instagram, you can do that as well. It's also the Virtual Assistant Studio.
Perfect. Perfect. Well, again, thanks. Thanks so much for your time. This has been very, very learning, a lot of learning for me, and I'm sure for some of our other listeners as well. So Amanda, thanks so much. And thanks everyone for listening to the Inspired Business Leaders podcast. And we will talk next time. Everyone have a good day.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Inspired Business Leaders podcast. brought to you by Inspire Wealth. To learn more about the topics mentioned on today's show or to listen to past episodes, visit www.inspiredbusinessleaderspodcast.com. Thanks again for tuning in, and we'll catch you in the next episode.